When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello there, and welcome to Thank the Maker, a podcast about heroes, princesses, scoundrels, hokey religions, ancient weapons, and all things Star Wars. I'm your host, Adam Russell.
And I'm your host, Nick Ganbarian. Unfortunately, Ryan, still dead. Can't bring him back.
It takes so long to revive someone from death.
I know. We're thinking about cloning him, but I'm in touch with his Force ghost. Maybe we could get his Force ghost next week.
We'll see. We'll talk to his Force ghost publicist.
Force publicist ghost.
But this time, instead of a duo cast, we have a sub, someone who you should be familiar with if you listen to the past few episodes, our friend Mike Forrester, a.k.a. Hondo Supply.
They keep bringing me back. I'm back.
Are you also known as Hondo Supply, or do you feel like that's just your company name? I feel like people call you Hondo, like, in the chat and stuff. What do you how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, at some point, I'm just growing. It's part of the brand. We're just growing brand awareness, right? Yeah. We're just keeping it going. At this point,
Armor Party, right, Hondo Supply.
Right. It's Hondo is way cooler than just Mike.
Hey, so it's Mike.
Yeah, it's just Mike. The Hondo would be way better on my business card. So, yeah, let's keep it going.
All right. Well, hi.
Hey.
Welcome to here.
You're here now.
I'm live from Portland instead of Michigan, which is fun.
You're traveling for work, not for Hondo Supply, for your stupid day job.
Yeah.
We asked you to guest host, and you were like, hold on, let me fly to Portland and do it from there real quick.
Yeah, I just wanted to make it complicated. And I bought a microphone because that's how dedicated I am to the Thank the Maker Network.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Mike Forrester, host of Armor Party, part of the Thank the Maker Network.
Yes.
Sounds so official altogether in one sentence. Okay, so we are here today to talk about, we apologize for not being more just like in the moment with this, but we're finally talking about The Bad Batch Season 1, Episodes 1 and 2, actually. We just did it all together because it came out on a Tuesday, the 4th, on a Tuesday, and then we usually record on a Tuesday. So it's just, you know, not enough turnaround time, and we wanted to really make sure we gave this what it deserves. So we took some more time. We got Episodes 1 and 2 together, what, like 90 minutes worth of stuff, right? 95
yeah,
minutes?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So I'm pumped. What do you guys think?
Which I got to say, hell yes to. I wish that was every week.
Yeah. Dude, the first episode, I found myself checking the time because, you know, if I'm fully in something, I don't check the time. But sometimes I'm like, oh God, I just don't want this to end. Please don't be the end yet, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And this was that. And I was so delighted when I hit it to see it was like 50% through, and I was all like, yes.
Yeah, that's a good feeling.
So sick. What did you guys think overall?
I loved it. I mean, I really, it felt so good. Whenever, you know, the last couple of months have been dominated by Marvel shows, and it feels so good to not be that committed to them because I could just be like, so that's what happened? Cool. Not yeah, like I have no, you know, thought. I'm just like, thank you for the story. Goodbye. So going into this, I was like, it's Star Wars, but I'm not freaking out about it. I don't know if that means I'm like not looking forward to it or whatever. I just don't know what to expect. So I'm so happy. I don't want to like overstate it or be like, I'm blown away, whatever. Like that hasn't happened yet, but I'm happily surprised that it's better and surpassed the little expectations I had for it so far.
Yeah. I think the, you know, having that original arc of them in the early episodes of the final season, I didn't really feel, I was like, yeah, this is a cool story. It's a cool subline. But obviously the last few episodes of the final season of Clone Wars just dominates everything else from that whole season.
Mm-hmm. Overshadows, yeah.
100%. So I was kind of like, you know, when I saw the announcement of the Bad Batch, I felt the same, Nick. It's like, yeah, I'm excited to see what they do with it.
It's like them?
But now, yeah, right. And now I'm super excited to have, to dive deeper into them. And this era of Star Wars is some of my favorite.
Yeah.
That post, the fall of the Republic and then the rise of the Empire is some of my favorite era. So I feel the same way.
These are for sure that the first two episodes, that's what I'm most excited about. I thought the crew overall was much more likable than their Clone Wars arc.
Yeah,
so that's really exciting. But already seeing the transition into the Empire, I'm like, that's what this whole series needs to be. Please make it be that.
Yeah.
That'll be so kick-ass.
Dude, what's cool though is we know that that's what's happening, right? We know there's that transition. That's the only thing though that we can kind of predict and say, oh, we know we're going to eventually see an OT trooper helmet. We're going to eventually see an OT TIE fighter, all the stuff that's going to kind of bring us up to Rebels, essentially, maybe.
Yeah.
But aside from that, we have no idea what's happening. Whereas as much as we love the Clone Wars, like the final arc was like, we know exactly how it ends. What are they going to show us leading up to it?
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like the stakes are so high. All throughout the first episode, I was literally on the edge of my seat. Like any of these people could die.
Yeah.
Anything could happen.
Right.
And it's so exciting to not know the ending.
It's cool. It's cool to like Clone Wars. They did a great job going into Revenge of the Sith, which I never thought they would do. It always seemed like storytelling wise, it had to go up to Revenge of the Sith, not into it.
Right.
So killer job there. But we got like 18 years of before A New Hope right now.
Yeah.
Not 18 years before Rebels, but like,
right.
You know, some stuff happens between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope that is already taken care of that they'll have to weave around, like, you know, Solo and Rebels and stuff like that.
Right.
But yeah, there's a lot of time here where they could do a lot of stuff that I don't want to say doesn't matter. It'll matter to the Bad Batch and the show, but it might not affect the overall original trilogy, like what they're going into, because there's so much time. They could have like a full-on, who knows, like something that happens that's massive, but is when it's done, it's done. It doesn't affect the original trilogy.
Yeah.
Right. And Fallen Order, which I think is probably the most prominent tie-in, you know, it starts off with on a planet called Bracca that's basically it's an Imperial shipyard where they're decommissioning all of the Republic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually later in the game, which isn't really a spoiler, but you see these clone helmets and they reference that these clones were here not that long ago. And so it's been a treat, I think, for people who have really consumed Star Wars media, the little tie-in of the transport shuttle, which we'll get into. And, you know, there's all these little throwbacks between, you know, it's been such an Easter egg fest for people who have consumed all the mediums that are available right now, especially for this era. So it's awesome. And the opening scene, when you realize who the young Padawan is, or the Jedi is so awesome. And they said the names and you went, whoa.
Yeah.
So good.
I was watching an interview with Brad Rao. He's kind of like the new Filoni for animation, I feel like. Like, Filoni created all this stuff, but I feel like...
a showrunner.
Supervising director, yeah.
Yeah, like... So I was watching an interview with him about Bad Batch, and he definitely said, like, expect characters that you know to pop up, like, surprises. So I think that he means... beyond Fennec and Rex, because they're in the trailer. So hey, maybe it's Cal, you know, like who there's people out
How
there
sick
would
that
be
dude?
Very, very sick to wind up in this show.
All right. Well, let's get in to some details and then we'll get into Stola plans. So we're talking about episodes 1 and 2, Aftermath, called Aftermath because it's Order 66 and the aftermath, right? Cut and Run. It's shorter. We'll get into what that's about. A few differences before we just little stuff that's fun to talk about. The opening Star Wars Disney, whatever you call that, kind of like
the pre-roll.
Yeah. The thing that we saw for the first time with the Mandalorian with the Disney Star Wars kind of shadowed helmet intro reveal thing that's been updated. Mm-hmm. There's now an animation version. Before it was Vader, BB-8, 3PO, Kylo Ren, R2, an X-Wing helmet, First Order helmet,
and a Scout Trooper bucket.
Mando, yeah. Now it is the animated version of Grievous, a hard to identify helmet.
From what I could read, people helped me because I knew it was an X-Wing helmet, but that didn't make sense because of this was an animation only thing. It was an X-Wing helmet from Bucket, who's a droid on Resistance.
Oh, word. Okay.
Yeah.
Then Chopper, then Crosshair's helmet. Then the commando battle droid, like the faster, you know, almost like little skinny Terminator kind. Mm-hmm. Wrecker's helmet, Ezra's cadet helmet, slash, what is that?
Oh, yeah, I think Mike and I were talking earlier. I think it's an ATDP and not necessarily Ezra's cadet helmet, okay. ATDP helmet.
Cadet yeah. helmets don't have the emblem, yeah. the insignia on it, and the DPs have a little bit more of a stormtrooper cheek gotcha. To them and smaller eyes, yeah.
Then Bo-Katan's helmet, and lastly, Hunter's helmet.
Yeah. I've tried so hard to identify all of them. There's a lot more than the live action version, and they're up for like half a second each, and they transition into each other. Yeah. First of all, there's more in the same amount of time, so the transition is just like so fast.
Yeah.
And it's animation, so I'm not like as, you know, the ATDP helmet. I'm like, wait, what? Who? Oh, I know I've seen it. What is it? Oh my God.
Yeah.
So that was cool. Good little detail.
And then on the first episode only, the opening title card, instead of just saying the Bad Batch, it does like we saw in the trailer, I guess, or in the teaser, where it shows the Clone Wars logo and then it kind of burns away to the Bad Batch logo.
Sweet.
Followed by a Clone Wars news bulletin style intro with the same, mm-hmm. what's his name?
Tom Kane,
yeah. Giving us another version of that Order 66, you know, like Kenobi has engaged General Grievous, kind of like time frame look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then into episode 2, we're beyond that. We've got a new kind of,
yeah.
So a little music piece and you just get straight into it.
Yeah, the way I took that is it was still the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
You know, so I was just like, oh, cool. I mean, obviously it's a good way to transition for people who watched the Clone Wars and don't know what this is. But technically that time, the story they were about to tell for like the first 10, 15 minutes of this episode was still the Clone Wars.
All right, let's get into stolen plans.
What have you done with those plans?
Like we said earlier, The Bad Batch debuted May 4th, 2021 on a Tuesday. Episode 2, the following Friday, same week, on the 7th. Created and executive produced by Dave Filoni. Head writer on this is Jennifer Corbett, who had worked on Star Wars Resistance. She also wrote a bunch on NCIS and some other network TV stuff. Supervising director, like Nick mentioned earlier, Brad Rao, who had worked on Rebels, Resistance, and Forces of Destiny. Runtime on the first episode is 70 minutes, 31 minutes on episode 2, which will probably be all of them around that 30-minute mark. Last time I checked, a solid 9 on IMDb for this. Well-deserved.
Hell yeah, Star Wars fans.
Yep.
So far, 93% on Rotten Tomatoes with a 93% audience score.
All right, Star Wars fans.
Crushing.
Let's do it.
Starring Dee Bradley Baker as like 100 people, as usual. Archie Panjabi as Depa Balaba for the first, I don't know, 5 minutes.
Right.
Freddie Prinze Jr., spoiler, as Caleb Doom, who goes on, of course, to become Kanan Jarrus in Rebels. Michelle Ang does the voice of Omega. And old Matthew Wood, back to be the battle droids for their brief appearance before they all get chopped up. And then we also get, actually, he's credited, but it's, you know, it's a clip from Revenge of the Sith. Ian McDiarmid as the Emperor, the exact clip from his Senate announcement. Hey, I'm the Emperor now. It's an empire. Everyone suck one.
What's he doing? He just Palpatine has to be in this enough for him to just voice it.
Yeah.
Just do it. Do it, yeah. Dude. Come on.
Do it. Do it.
You know, and you know he's about it. He's always just hamming it up. Like when he was at Celebration, you know he loves this shit.
Yeah.
I hope he shows up. I hope we keep getting things like that. I hope we keep checking in with the remaining clone troopers and conscripted soldiers.
I did look that word up because at this point, like I've always, you know, context clues understood what it meant, but it also sounded to me in my head, conscription sounded like take a normal person and brainwash them a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's not, it just literally means like a normal person recruited into an army. So
yeah,
it's a little bit less of a heavy word than I thought.
Yeah.
So Disney Plus describes this Star Wars The Bad Batch as a series that follows the elite and experimental clones of the Bad Batch first introduced in The Clone Wars as they find their way in a rapidly changing galaxy in the immediate aftermath of The Clone War. Members of The Bad Batch a unique squad of clones who vary genetically from their brothers in the clone army, each possess a singular exceptional skill that makes them extraordinarily effective soldiers and a formidable crew. And you would never guess what each one does based on their name. You just you'd have no idea.
Wait, I'm going to give you guys Bad Batch names. You ready? Adam, Hoster, because you're the host. Mike, Guester.
Yeah.
And I'll be...
Toy collection guy.
Collector. I'm the collector.
The collector.
And Drew could be the producer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There we go.
Producer.
We're so creative, dude.
Yeah.
I'm about to write a show.
It's just like first thing. It comes to my mind right away. Just easy.
Yep.
So like we talked about earlier, we were introduced to these characters in the first arc of season 7 of The Clone Wars. Those first three episodes were all about these dudes pretty much. And yet they interacted with Rex and everyone else, but they were big. We also meet a character named Omega, who we'll talk about a little bit later, or a lot later. She fits sort of that general, not cliche, not archetype, but just like a younger character like Ezra or Ahsoka that comes in just young and enthusiastic. And at first you're like, who is this kid, dude? I'm going to punch this kid. But very quickly proves herself as someone who's key to the story and the crew.
Yeah.
And I feel like Omega goes from a half hour, goes from like, who's this little kid who's just all up in everybody's business to, all right, sweet. She's on the team. Sick. Yeah.
I kind of like, as much as I love Ezra and Ahsoka, I actually think the introduction of Omega is better than the introduction of Ezra or Ahsoka.
Yeah.
Like immediately having a child be like, oh, here we go again. It's going to be annoying like Ezra or Ahsoka. And it was not. She's awesome. Good job.
I feel like Omega had some reminiscent vibes of Luke Skywalker in the way of saying, you know, oh, you guys are Clone Order 60, you know, you're Clone Force 99. Luke looking at...
You know the rebellion against the Empire?
Right, right. Yeah. And yeah, right. And so like, you know, you have these like starry eyes and then the chance to prove it, right, in the mess hall. At the beginning, you're like, oh, okay, like she's just going to sit here and annoy them for the next hour of this episode.
Right.
And then in the mess hall, you're like, let's party. She's down to clown.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, very quickly she established this, that she was going to be the, you know, the next member of the Bad Batch. Mm-hmm. But I love the tenacity of her, and I love the curiosity, and I love the way that they handle, especially we'll get into it on for episode 2, but that scene of her just touching soil for the first time when your whole planet is covered underwater was beautiful.
Yeah. It reminiscent of Rey seeing so much green, you know, same kind of vibes.
Or characters in the movie Waterworld, all the way at the end.
the smokers really got in the way of that one.
Kevin Kiner is back to score this and crushing. Dude keeps getting better.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, he brought in the one thing I noticed, you know, once the quote-unquote Clone Wars part of the episode ended, I feel like you started to bring in more and more of that like synthy undertone, which was in the final arc of the Clone Wars. So I'm so happy that that seems like it's back and is going to be a part of this, because we're in a dark time. And what emotes like musically like a dark feeling more than just synthy undertones? It's so good.
Right.
Let's talk about the characters again briefly to catch anyone up who wasn't paying close enough attention, or if you're listening to this and you haven't watched yet, first, shame on you. But secondly, here are the characters.
Spoiler alert.
Clone Force 99 is what they're officially known as. Oh, Drew, you're one of those people. You son of a bitch. AKA The Bad Batch, unofficially known as The Bad Batch. Hunter, who is basically Rambo, but actually I found out recently was, what's the character he was modeled after? From Predator. The dude, I think he's Native American.
He
cuts across his chest with a big Bowie knife, you know?
Yeah, he recognizes that there's something in the woods.
That dude. Forgot his name.
He looks into the jungle. I gotta look it up.
He was officially modeled after that dude. Tech, who is the tech dude, he's Donatello. Wrecker, he's the big, you know, the muscle dude. Crosshair, he's the sniper. He was officially Billy. There you go, Drew. Billy from Predator. Crosshair was modeled after somebody. I saw somebody post on Instagram a breakdown of all of this. I'm blowing it now. And then Echo, who was the clone in season 7, we find Echo used as a tool by the Separatists.
He's fully automated.
Yeah, he's all f***ed up. He's more machine now than man. You know, he's got the computer interface arm and all the stuff. So he's the most classic clone trooper in that sense. He's unmodified otherwise. He's not proportionally different. His face, other than being a little...
more pale.
Pale.
Gaunt.
He's a little
gaunt,
emaciated.
Yeah, other than that, he looks and sounds more like the kind of classic clone troopers than anyone. And then Omega, who we talked about, we'll get into specifically who she is and why she is. She becomes part of the Bad Batch. Lama Sue, one of the Kaminoan characters that we met in episode 2, Attack of the Clones, the Prime Minister of Kamino. Nala Se, who's the chief medical scientist. The two of them are super key, actually, in the first episode. Mm-hmm. So it's good to point out them as characters here because, as we'll talk about later, they do things that are, to me, were unexpected. The way that they support and help the Bad Batch and Omega, they were pretty shady in the Clone Wars cartoon. Mm-hmm. They were like pretty neutral in the film, but I don't know.
Yeah,
to me,
I feel like maybe now they feel like they're getting, you know, stabbed in the back. So they're like, oh yeah, watch this.
Right.
Watch my long neck go.
You feel like they know that. They're whatever they've been doing selling the clone army, like they feel backed into a corner now, and that there was the tension of them talking with Tarkin was so great because Tarkin he clearly had already had his mind made up, and at this point he's just using every option he can to prove that the clones are ineffective for the Galactic Empire.
Yeah,
so I thought that was a great set of dialogue.
And Tarkin, now at this point, Admiral Tarkin, he's acting very much like the Grand Moff Tarkin that we know from A New Hope. He's fully like, he's on that just ruthless, you know, military leader, borderline dictator kind of vibe that we know from the original trilogy. Mm-hmm.
And we have to obviously, I know we don't speculate on the show, but clearly he did something to become Grand Moff. And maybe that's something that we talk about or theorize, but that I thought that was also very important that they said that he's Admiral Tarkin, not Grand Moff, by the time we meet him in A New Hope.
All right, let's do a quick kind of plot overview, and then we'll get into some more discussion. So episode 1, Aftermath, opens with another angle of Order 66, like we talked about. We see the clones turn on Jedi Depa Balaba. I felt really cool and really Star Wars knowledgeable when I heard her name and saw her.
Yeah.
But it's only because we recently talked about her that I knew her name and knew that Caleb was her Padawan. So as soon as I heard her name and saw her, I was like, no way they're doing it. Holy shit. Right out of the gate, they're doing it.
Well, hopefully our listeners now are like, I know who that is. I know.
Yeah. You're welcome, listeners. So we see a young Padawan, Caleb Doom, on the planet of Kallar. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We see the clones turn. We see, you know, Order 66, execute Order 66 happen. And the clones turn on her. She tells Caleb, run, get out of here. She gets killed. Caleb goes into hiding. We assume later, like we said, he changes his name and becomes Kanan Jarrus.
I assume that's the last we see of him in this series.
Yeah. I was wondering as it was happening, like, are we going to spend more time with him? But he gone.
Yeah.
Pulled that sick Jedi force jump across the canyon.
What a beautiful shot, huh?
Yeah.
It was awesome.
It was a little similar to Ahsoka and Maul in like the Mandalorian like throne room.
Right.
Where it was just like a really wide shot, but beautiful. Love it.
The Bad Batch are mostly unaffected by Order 66, which I think most of us kind of expected, you know, predicting what this would be. Their mutations, turns out, seem to have overpowered or kind of short-circuited in a way, or at least, I don't know, made the inhibitor chips not as effective, except for Crosshair, who seems to be slightly affected.
Right.
Not a full turn, but he's like struggling with it.
He repeats that line too.
Yeah. Good soldiers follow orders. Order. Yeah.
Yeah.
On Kamino, we meet, like we mentioned earlier, another altered clone. It turns out Omega, she's a little girl. We don't know how old she is, right? But we assume she's, I don't know, probably 12, 10.
Well, I don't know. There's accelerated growth and stuff like that. I never know how old any clone is.
Yeah.
They're like 5 years old.
Except for Boba.
Well, yeah.
Boba's unaltered. Yeah.
It'll be interesting. Dude, what if she's Boba's sister?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Are we going down this rabbit hole?
Let's not speculate.
The Sarlacc pit.
We'll talk about this in the after show. All right. I just got excited.
Yeah. You got to say, when thing, you know, especially at our advanced age, if I think of something and I'm just like, oh, I'll remember that later. It's like, no.
Will not.
Drew, make an actual note. Put it on a post-it or in one of those little day planners that old people keep.
Yeah.
Write it in that until later.
Today, I had an idea.
I write a note and like pin it to my t-shirt.
Today, I passed a healthy stool. Omega seems almost immediately kind of drawn and connected to the Bad Batch.
Big fan.
Yeah. She knows that they're kind of outcast. She feels kind of like an outcast. And she's immediately just like, hey, guys, what are you doing? Can I hang out? They're bros. They're siblings. Let's call them siblings. Tarkin shows up on Kamino informing Lama Su that the Empire doesn't want to use clone troopers anymore. They're going to move towards conscripted recruits. Tarkin was never a fan of clones. We learned that in the Clone Wars. Was it the one where they were
breaking out of the, I think they were breaking out
Citadel?
Of the Citadel. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not down. He's a dick. He actually questions whether or not the Bad Batch executed Order 66. He's skeptical. He says the Jedi on Kalar were not confirmed dead. So he's got an idea that someone like Kanan is still out there. He's just a bad guy. He's skeptical. Like it. And until I see bodies, sorry, I don't believe you.
Mm-hmm. Well, he said only one was confirmed dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which,
and I think he referenced, I assume Crosshair, that somebody said that a Padawan got away. So it must have been Crosshair.
In their report, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he says one of their own mm-hmm. reported an inconsistency. So I think, yeah, he's well aware that there's something off with the Bad Batch.
So to test the clones' loyalty, Tarkin sends them on a mission. Well, at first he puts them through like a training thing back in the old training facility, shooting live fire at them. That's messed up. Mm-hmm. But they kick ass as usual. But then he sends them on a mission to snuff out a group of, quote, insurgents on Onderon. We know Onderon from the Clone Wars, where the sort of original rebels were trained by Anakin and Rex. That's where, of course, Saw Gerrera is. They go on to find that. He says these insurgents are separatist force, blah, blah, blah. But they get there and find there are no droids. There are no separatists. It's just Saw and a bunch of just people, kids, you know, men, women, children, the whole thing. All of them, except for Crosshair, of course, because early indicated that shit's going to go down with him.
He's like half Order 66, which is 33.
He's Order 33.
Nice.
They realized that they were sent there under false pretense. There were no weapons of mass destruction. Crosshair wants to just follow orders, complete the mission, but Hunter just keeps telling him to stand down. And he's like, what's wrong with you? You're not fit to lead. You know, there's conflict kind of right off the bat. They find a probe droid who is spying on them. It's just all these red flags. Like, this is not right, right? We shouldn't trust Tarkin. We can't be down with this Empire stuff. So they end up going back to Kamino. They want to get Omega because they spent some time with her. Like we talked about in the mess hall there. They had a connection.
I think from the very beginning of meeting Omega, Hunter has some sort of instinct, as he will. That's kind of his thing. He has this instinctual instinct. Yeah. So that's his mutation. But he feels something about Omega. So they actually go back to get Omega.
And also note, that is an Imperial probe droid that we see most famously in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, straight up, that model.
We're like moving right into it, which I love.
So they get there. Shit kind of gets weird. They end up being captured. They're being imprisoned. But they escape with Omega's help, their team. But I guess before they escape, they come to take, some troopers come to take Crosshair. They take him into the same, I guess, kind of like the same med bay, right? Where they, where Rex had his chip removed. It's on Kamino.
So yeah, it looked pretty similar.
Yeah. So Tarkin has his chip just like juiced up fully. You know, he's fully Order 66. You know, they basically convert Crosshair to a full villain. So they escape, but as they're, you know, they're in the hangar, they're trying to get their ship and get out, Crosshair shows up with a squad of troopers fully blacked out in bad guy trooper armor, and they shoot it out. Omega comes in with a clinch save, like Sergeant Al Powell at the end of Die Hard, blasts Crosshair, shoots his rifle right out of his hand. They all escape. But they also, as they're trying to get out, they're trying to shut the hangar bay doors, but Nalase, both the Kaminoans, they disable remotely, I guess, the hangar bay doors. Bad Batch, take it out. We'll discuss that motivation later, probably. And then their plan is, now that they've escaped, they're going to go to J-19. That's all they call the planet, where they have a friend who can help, where they can lay low. They jump to light speed. And that's the end of the episode. And it's great.
Yeah. We went over it for 3 or 4 minutes just now. But, I mean, 70 minutes was not bored at all. You know, we kind of brushed over a whole food fight scene, which you would be like, a food fight scene in Star Wars, I quit. But no, yeah. It's awesome. It was fun.
It is awesome.
It was a good time.
And there's a great moment, a great like quote in there by Wrecker, which is actually in our favorite quotes poll. It's all great stuff. Like every scene in this is great character development. There's not a moment wasted. And for like the first episode of a cartoon series, like compare this to the first episode of The Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. Holy shit. This is,
yeah, right.
This is great.
I think one thing too that you know, being that producer Drew hasn't seen Bad Batch yet, but just I think you actually in a weird way don't even need to see Clone Wars to already know what's going on in Bad Batch.
I agree.
I've been telling people just dive in.
It's wild that they could do that. You know, there's definitely going to be some. It's just this like duality of Star Wars storytelling these days is where it's like it has to be nerdy enough for the nerds and easy enough to understand for like everybody else, and it's like they've been walking that line to varying success depending on what, you know, Mandalorian or sequels or whatever. But yeah, I mean they really killed it with this, because they're making me, who I'm gonna like it no matter what, but I think I love it already, which is great.
I think it comes down to the impact too, right? So if when we see the inevitable meetup of the Bad Batch with Rex, mm-hmm. if you haven't seen Clone Wars, you're going to go, oh, it's a new character. This is cool. He yeah. has cool armor, and clearly there's a backstory. The same way that people who weren't really big Star Wars fans didn't feel that oomph when Bo-Katan showed up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I think, but the story still works, because the characters, the dialogue works just enough that they explain what they need to explain. And if, you know, you're not feeling this huge wave of nostalgia, it still holds up. Mm-hmm. And something else too that I wanted to point out, Adam, when we see Crosshair again, he has new armor.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's very reminiscent of the Imperial Death Troopers, especially yes. that chest. So I think already we are starting. And you notice too, the clones, besides the red and white shock trooper, what would normally were the Coruscant guards, I believe, they're starting to strip all mm-hmm. of the color and all of the ranking yeah. off of these troopers. So we are
yeah.
fully into the transition here. And I think I'm super excited to see that. But I noticed that was a 100% design decision to say that the Imperial Death Troopers are obviously they protect high profile people within the Empire. Crosshair is exactly that kind of, you know, he might be the original Death Trooper, yeah. which would be so sick to see.
Speaking of like stripping away the color and individuality in that like cafeteria food fight scene, all the clones all have the same exact haircut. They all actually look like clones. There's no individuality there. And you would know better mm-hmm. than me, but they're all helmetless, but that armor looks more, is that clone armor, or does that starting to lean more into like stormtrooper armor? It looked very yeah. stormtrooper-y to me.
Yeah, it looks like it's what would be considered a, you know, phase two clone. And mm-hmm. then I think it's essentially at this point transitioning. And it's also, you know, we're looking at the difference too of when we saw a lot of these transitional characters in Rebels, which is a different animation style yeah. too. So I think we're going to start really seeing the shape, and we're going to start seeing the helmets round out more, because the, you know, clone buckets were really tall and they had a certain height to them. And I think we're going to start to see those. I don't think we're going to see them as exaggerated as they were in Rebels, but mm-hmm. I'm so excited to see Imperial armor in this style of animation.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to yeah. be more real, like more, you know, as opposed to Rebels was exaggerated because that's the animation right. style, but I would assume Clone Wars, a Clone Wars version of a original trilogy stormtrooper is going to be pretty dead on.
Yeah. And we saw I think we saw snowtroopers we saw a couple of,
yeah, yeah.
We saw a couple of stormtroopers at the end of season mm-hmm. 7. So they clearly have the models already, and it's just a matter of time before we start to really see that official transition.
Exciting.
So you'll be covering this in depth on your podcast on Armor Party, probably by the end of this season, all the differences and breaking it down, right?
Well, our first guest, John Rodriguez, is one of the first approved clone hunters. He's one of the first approved. He was the second approved Bad Batch member, and watching his process of breaking down how we're seeing more and more of these characters has been awesome. And it's, yeah, we're going to see so many Bad Batch cosplay. I'm all in.
Sick.
I'm going to be Omega.
Tick.
Omega.
Hunter. Rika.
Rika. All right, let's talk about episode 2, Cut and Run. So the Bad Batch arrive on a planet called Seleucami to meet former clone trooper Cut LaQuane, is apparently his last name. Did they say
Cut
that?
LaQuane. I don't remember if they said it, but...
Or is it just like a Wikipedia article?
Kinda. Probably.
Look, LaQuane, it makes me think of... what's the name? In Quaid in Total Recall.
Oh, yeah. Quaid.
We have to give them the air.
Get your ass to Mars.
a Total Recall podcast. Thank you.
Yeah, I think we're up to like 3 movies so far. Waterworld. Yeah,
Waterworld was a deep cut, Nick. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. I love that movie. That's a good movie.
If I'm not me, who the hell am I? We first met Cut in season 2, episode 10 of The Clone Wars. That episode was actually called The Deserter. Cut was a clone who deserted. He wanted a life of his own. Was there like explanation of why, or was he just in a way like a defective clone as well, essentially, like you assume? Defective in the sense that he didn't follow.
Do not remember.
I think there was some backstory in which like he was the only surviving member of his troop that basically got annihilated. And so I think rather than trying to regroup, he was like, I'm just going to go and survive.
Yeah. I mean, I remember him having some reasons of like, you know, it's like, I'm fighting a war I don't even care for, you know, like that type of thing.
Right. Yeah. Point being, he has a wife and 2 kids. He's just living a simple farm life. He's out there just trying to chill and lay low and not be discovered because there are hundreds of thousands, if not a couple million by this point, twins of him. So he has to lay low and grow sideburns, apparently. That'll do it.
Farming. A man of his talents.
Well done.
I love his sideburns, by the way. They're like...
hella bushy.
Sideburns, but then they're like only at the bottom they're long.
And they really poof out to the side real hard.
Yeah, like it's as if they were like not, you know, like a beard is bushy. It's like the edges weren't bushy, they were long. Yeah. Like the ends weren't bushy, they were long.
Very Wolverine from the comic books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to find out later that he has like a flat iron at home. He just straightens the ends of the sideburns real hard. So they show up there with Omega because she bailed with them. She experiences dirt for the first time. Like we talked about her.
Yeah.
She's easy to impress. She's lived on this rainy ass water planet. That's, you know, she's like the equivalent of like, you know, what is Bruce Willis's daughter in Armageddon hang out on the big oil thing in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's what Kamino's like for her. So she thinks dirt is just super sick. Cut tells Hunter that Rex warned them. Apparently Rex was there the day before that there's a storm coming. The Imperial presence is growing. Seleucami is no longer safe to hide. They have to get out of there. And it's kind of like, yeah, we'll just take you. But here's the wrinkle. The Empire is making it mandatory for every resident to have a chain code in order to leave. A chain code for your vessel and for individuals. But the clones, of course, can't do that because they'll be outed. So no one can get these chain codes legitimately. So they have to come up with this plan to infiltrate the base and access a security kiosk, steal the equipment to make the chain codes. So they have their ship impounded on purpose by the Empire, and they hide inside to get in there. Omega inadvertently ends up on the ship, which Hunter is not stoked about, you know, because they just do this plan like, yeah, we're just going to get it impounded. And Hunter's like, are you shitting me? Omega's on that ship. So she ends up in there with them, but she ends up helping get the chain codes. She's just, you know, the bold kid like we were talking about. I'm like, oh, I'll go get him. It was really reminiscent of, God, what was it? There's another Star Wars moment where they're like, God damn it, where it's like, maybe it's a Han and Chewie moment.
Or they're like, I'll do it.
Oh, no. Return of the Jedi, when it seems one of your friends is...
yeah.
The Ewok runs off to... You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, the... Where they're,
is it Wicket? He runs out there and
basically distracts them so they can get into the bunker.
Yeah, they're like talking about what the plan's going to be, and they look up and it's like, well, that's already happening. The little one's already out there, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So she helps. They get the chain codes. They come back. all hell's starting to break loose because, like, the thing's impounded. They got to blast out. They also need to get
the Laquains.
The Laquains on their ship to actually get out of there. That seems to be going just fine. They're going to get on the shuttle and it's going to be good. But Hunter's like, Omega, you have to stay with them. I can't be your dad. You can't be hanging out with a bunch of dudes with guns, with a bunch of gangster ass dudes out in space. You need to go have a nice life with these people. It's a super heart-wrenching moment. Gnarly. We'll talk about it later. Tech even, like, this was already the plan. Tech even made a chain code for her because she was going to be gone, right? So the Laquains leave the planet, no issues, but the Bad Batch, like I said, they're hung up with the troopers. They have to blast their way out. During the shootout, here comes Omega running. She's saying, no, let Omega take the wheel. She's going to do what she wants. She leaves the family and comes back to the Bad Batch. They escape. They have a little heart-to-heart at the end, Hunter and Omega, after they escape unscathed. And he tells her, you know, if this is where she wants to be, this is where she'll stay. And the episode ends there.
Love it. Love it. Where are they going?
Yeah, they didn't say, right?
Tatooine. I don't know.
off into the sunset.
Well, if you saw I was telling Nick earlier, if you saw the Star Wars in the official Instagram, you know how they do the recap where they talk about, you know, this episode now streaming.
Yeah.
They accidentally did the now streaming recap for episode 3.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Don't say anything. Don't say it.
No, we won't say it. But it's going to be a fun episode for sure. Episode 3.
Say no words.
I will not.
So let's discuss. And we can talk about that episode a little bit. Just in closing on episode 2, basically that was a lot of character development, really, for the kind of father figure thing with Hunter and Omega. Omega feeling like she hasn't necessarily ever felt like she fit in. Until she met the Bad Batch, she's kind of got things about her that are unique and that makes her fit in. You know, she's got her thing that we'll speculate on later. So ultimately, it's about Hunter trying to treat someone like a human and not a soldier, especially a little kid, and dealing with that, and about Omega kind of finding her place in the world, the galaxy, essentially.
And that little moment with the Nexu, that she almost gets attacked by it, is really is really important, because you see that Cut has fully understood what it takes to be a father, and that
he's fully made the switch.
Yeah, and Hunter yells at her because he's like, you know, you could have got killed. And Omega literally 5 minutes before was like, what's dirt? This is amazing.
Yeah.
Let alone
what's
this,
a ball? What do you do with it?
Right. She can't. So seeing this huge beast right there, and they, you know, very specifically said, do not go past the fence. And there was just a really cool moment to show that the clones were capable of not just being soldiers, that they were capable of turning off that fight or flight mentality that they've been essentially bred to have. It was a cool moment for Hunter to kind of see it modeled by another one of him, right? So I thought that was a super key part of understanding where their story is going to go as pseudo father, daughter.
So let's discuss. We have a few points to discuss. We mentioned earlier about the Kaminoans helping the Bad Batch escape. Their motivation there is unclear, but we know for sure that they're displeased with the idea of no longer being customers of the Republic. Mm-hmm. The Republic, according to Tarkin, no longer needs clones. And they're like, no, man, our clones are better than your stupid soldiers. Our product's better. Like,
and they had a contract with the Republic, and Tarkin is like, the Republic doesn't exist. We're the Empire now.
Yeah.
Shady.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they said straight up, they'll keep an eye on the Empire until Tarkin's intentions are clear. I would like to give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that Nala Se has more of a connection to Omega. Mm-hmm. There seems to be some of that. I don't know. I don't want to speculate too much about what Omega really is, what their intention was with making her.
I have one idea that is so not Star Wars.
Let's talk about this in the after show as well. Drew put that in the day planner.
Yeah,
after our brunch.
I'm not letting on to what it is, but it's not a Star Wars idea.
If we talk about what we saw on screen, right? It's not speculation. Omega was referred to by the
Omega.
She was referred to as a medical assistant. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then she also revealed when Tech was obviously aware of the inhibitor chip, she explained she was well aware that the clones have inhibitor chips in their heads. I mean, she literally has been helping them do procedures and get the clones up to snuff. That's
like she popped up in that one scene and was like, oh, because of the inhibitor chip.
Right. So we know that she is very aware of how this process works. And what's important about that is that she's referred to as a medical assistant, and that she may be able to also turn off inhibitor chips or be able to remove them, say, if we have more people like Rex. And the other thing that maybe getting down the line too, if we go back a little bit, we see in the beginning that a Jedi body was brought back to Kamino, which makes no sense other than they have intentions of using Jedi bodies for something, right? The lightsaber falls out. They made it very heavy that it was not a casualty. It was most specifically a Jedi being brought back to Kamino. Kamino is the cloning facility. So we understand that we see that she has a little bit of the Force sensitivity. Adam and I have talked about this offline where we're like, you know, she has this premonition of the Force sense that Yoda has. And then she also pulls that one in a million shot and, you know, knocks the sniper off his roost and everything. So we know that there's clearly some kind of connection of what Omega actually is. That's all seen on screen. So I don't think we have to get too far into the theorizing it, because theorizing is so fun. But based on what we've seen, there's clearly being a groundwork laid out that she's a very special person. That's not just a medical assistant.
My speculation has nothing to do with the Force.
Oh, boy.
I'm very excited to tell. I haven't told anyone.
All right.
We're very excited.
Get us to that after show.
That's for the patrons in the after show.
It's juicy.
All right. Nalase says there are five defective clones since Echo is a regular clone. Omega's the fifth, right? Mm. And they say it straight up. It's interesting, though, because Tarkin's asking her. I guess it's more about Tarkin's wording than Nalase's. She's just acknowledging, like, yeah, there are five clones that are non-standard, right? She doesn't directly refer to Omega as defective. Mm. So I guess the thought here in putting this in the discussion was, I guess, the nomenclature of defective versus modified, right?
Well, at some point, it might have been right after that, perhaps, where I want to say Tech, he says, we're not defective, we're deviant.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing.
Yeah,
the mutation.
Which I feel like, right. yeah, exactly. So, and also there's that excellent line of, I think Cut says that the Kaminoans don't ever do it, like whatever clone they make has a purpose, you know?
Yeah.
Like all of this, everyone has a purpose. And again, Omega has to have a purpose. So we're going to try and figure out what it is. And it just seems like there's a connection with her and at least Hunter, and Hunter's mutation is that he's, you know, perceptive and that type of thing. So
yeah,
that's all I'll say about
it. But the conversation that she had with Crosshair was so telling, right? Because she goes, I know what you're going to do, and you don't have to do it. And so she knows that he's already, either she's reading into him, maybe that is Hunter like sense of that he's anxious, that he knows that she sees that he's got betrayal written all over him. And so that could be it. I mean, we're anticipating it that it's, you know, the Force, because we want to obviously always make those connections. And the Jedi body is so hard to ignore because clearly the lightsaber hit the ground. They made a very big show of that. But then we also look at the same thing of what we're saying is, you know, does she have Crosshair's abilities too, to just pick up a blaster and make a Crosshair shot? So the theories are definitely all the tracks for all these crazy theories. None of them have enough evidence to be disproven at this point, which is kind of exciting. Yeah,
for sure. Is there a reason she took off her little headdress, or is that just meant to be like, I'm, you know, that is in my past now.
Yeah.
I've moved on.
I mean, I think in this episode, without speculating, I think it's just that's in the past. But I really wonder if that has some sort of connection to Nalase somehow.
Yeah.
Because Nalase wore it, but Lama Su didn't, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And they seem to have some sort of connection and work together and in the med bay or whatever. So I wonder if that is some sort of way for them to communicate.
So Rex was there yesterday in relation to when they showed up at Cut's place. we already know Rex is in this. We saw him in the trailer. I didn't expect right out of the gate, though, then to be like, yeah, Rex. Yeah, yesterday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had freaking brunch.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could go either way, actually. Mentioning that right there, he could be, you know, one step ahead of them for the entire season, mm-hmm. and they could not meet up until the end. Or this could indicate that, I mean, next week we might get Rex.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, think about the timeline of this, too. We saw Order 66 and Rex and Ahsoka go through that. He went to J-19 like the next day, or maybe within that day of Order 66.
Yeah.
Because that timeline really, it's pretty tight right there. So he must have went there maybe with the same intention that the Bad Batch did, to like, I know a guy who's, you know, hiding away. I might be able to hide with him.
Yeah. So in that sense, you have to assume they're going to have all the same contact points.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Rex, the Bad Batch, anyone else who's like, what the fuck is this Order 66 shit?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be going to the same people.
Right.
So that lines up. That checks out. I really like this subtle social commentary with the Empire Chain Code Registry,
mm-hmm.
a little social commentary on the slippery slope towards tyranny, the kind of Big Brother stuff, the giving everybody a tag and a number.
Yeah.
An iPhone.
Yeah. Giving everybody the old COVID tracker in their arm.
Yeah.
God.
What I agree with you, Adam, is cool about that is because when we see that, I hope most people would have remembered it from The Mandalorian. He holds up the chain code to basically get in to work with the client. And then eventually get into, I believe he uses the chain code to get into the, when he first meets Dr. Pershing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we had never seen that before. We had never really seen, you know, we had seen, you know, where are you going with these droids? And we never saw any form of this, like, you know, here's my ID. We saw in Rogue One, there was a ID card when Bodhi, the pilot, when Saw looks at his credentials as an Imperial crewman or pilot.
Right.
But we had never really understood where the card came from when Mando holds it up and when he says, you know, chain code. So it's really cool to see Filoni being Filoni and explaining where that concept came from.
Yeah. There is a little, I don't know, there's discussion on how well that all fits in place. Let's just do this and we'll talk about it.
A certain point of view.
Many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
So chain codes are new, is the way it's presented?
I think so. I have one theory.
Because Django, or Boba says, this chain code says that this was my father's armor, right?
I know we were talking about this earlier, but I think Boba's actual quote, I looked it up, and it says, my chain code has been encoded in this armor for 25 years. That checks out. 25 years before Mando is chain code time. He doesn't say Django. He says the armor's been in his family with Django, but he says, Boba specifically says the armor has been encoded for 25 years, which that timeline checks out.
So the chain code, it's kind of a bullshit point for him to make. Like, yeah, this is my dad's. Don't do the math, guy that I'm trying to prove this to right now. You know, like, hey, Din, don't do the math.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you did the math, you'd realize that I put the chain code on this armor way after my dad died. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or if a chain code.
You know what I'm saying?
Chain code is a ancestry.com, basically, for the galaxy, and you don't know if Tarkin may have been inspired by the Mandalorian's ability to reference history, because history is so important to the Mandalorians, and Tarkin is willing to erase the entire history of the Republic. So I don't know if maybe chain code was just a terminology for historical documents, but you can. Maybe he was inspired.
Or serial number,
yeah,
whatever.
Something. So maybe he was inspired by the Mandalorians to say they keep very good track of history, and that would help us prevent from any insurrection in the future. So could hold up.
And it could also be that, yes, things have serial numbers. Like, yeah, you buy an iPhone, it has a serial number. But a human being doesn't necessarily have a serial number. So it could be, at this point, they say, well, now every person and every ship and everything has to have a serial number and it has to be registered.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
with the Galactic Empire.
Right. That's the line in the sand. It's not as if the concept has been invented. It's just the concept that everyone has to have one and it has to be registered. starts at this point in history.
Yeah, right.
I'm thinking back to that Boba, you know, the thing you brought up. I think Boba, his point was, I'm a Mandalorian, when he was talking to Din. And he says, this armor was my father's, and that's how he proves that he's Mandalorian. Then he says, here's more proof that my father is who I say he is. Here's my chain code, which was encoded 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that that all checks out.
All right. Solved. One thing I saw pretty quickly, and actually in the Discord, somebody had a meme in there about it. The apparent inconsistency of this telling of Order 66 with Caleb versus the Kanan comic.
Yeah.
Is there much? Do either of you guys know much? I've heard that it lines up pretty well. It doesn't add too much, doesn't change too much.
I mean, there's no Bad Batch. I know that much in the comic.
Right.
And there's one of the commanders, I think they changed his look. So I think, who was the commander at the beginning?
Gray, it's, I want to say.
Gray, yeah. And I guess they had changed his armor pretty drastically for the show. And I guess some people were pretty upset about that. Yeah. But, you know, I think, and when you guys had the, who was it that came on from Marvel?
Yeah, Heather and Charles.
Yeah, and, you know, when they talked about sometimes when the shows or the movies, which at this point are the biggest properties, if they retcon something, you just go, okay, you know. Yeah.
And, sorry, bro.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because I know that the Kanan comic is pretty revered by fans. And so, I haven't read it, so I don't have that appreciation for it. But it seems like a pretty trivial thing to me, I guess.
Yeah.
But
I guess the best way to put it is broad brushstrokes, everything is the same. Details are not the same, but like the outcome is the same.
Sure.
I don't know. I've been thinking about this a lot too. And we've been sold the like hard canon line when Disney took over. Everything from that point on basically is canon, and everything that before that wasn't. But there's been some instances where this like broad brushstroke retcon happens where like, I think the Siege of Mandalore between Ahsoka and Maul is a little different than it was in the Clone Wars. Now this,
right. Yeah.
If Disney's listening, and I know they are, I kind of want to say, like, if the screen supersedes publishing, then give us more screen so this doesn't happen. You know, like,
right.
Like, yeah. Don't push the comics and the novels. I mean, I'm not saying don't make them, but don't say that they're canon if ultimately they can be messed with. Give us more of this important stuff on screen. And
I think that's come, a lot of those decisions were made pre Favreau Filoni, mm-hmm. kind of becoming the creative architects of the Feiges of Star Wars kind of moving mm-hmm. forward. So I'm not that surprised. I'm actually surprised it hasn't happened more in Star Wars, to be honest. It's actually quite incredible what the story group has done to mm-hmm. make it so that this is a fairly, like you said, broad brush strokes to get to the same result. Considering how expansive the Star Wars universe is and what people kind of hold on to, if mm-hmm. you have fierce fans of some of these comic series and some of these stories, because they feel like they put the time in to appreciate these mediums. And so when stuff gets retconned, I can understand why they're upset. But if we're looking at the overall architecture of what they're building, mm-hmm. you kind of got to look at it and say, I think we're okay.
Yeah. I mean, this is totally a very Nick opinion, because I just want to like be like, hey guys, relax. Like you cannot expect a comic book to supersede a movie or a television show.
Right.
So it's kind of like, I really want, like, in the most like calm way, if you get annoyed that like a novel or a comic book gets overwritten, it's like, you can't expect that to happen. Like you have to really, really calm down with that expectation. It's not gonna happen.
Hey, here's some stuff for you to clarify. The Kanan comic started, it's a few issues, came out 2015, ended 2016. It's a two-book thing, 12 issues altogether. You know what? We will get all of this clarified. We'll get it straight from friend of the pod who knows it best. Heather Antos was the assistant editor on this. So we'll have her on for one of these Bad Batch episodes, and we'll talk about it.
I think she knows.
Cool, 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 cool.
Totally cool, totally cool. All right, here's one. From a certain point of view, how are you going to say that clones are too expensive when you build two full Death Stars? Tarkin.
This is a good point.
Wait, what if it's cause and effect or whatever? You have to get rid of the clones because you're building Death Stars. Ha ha.
Case closed. That's the quickest, from a certain point of view, we've ever had. Done.
Wow.
The Kaminoans are like, you know, we did already kind of pay for this. And Tarkin's thinking about the second Death Star beginning construction. He's like, we kind of did too. So I'm going to go ahead and walk away from this because I'm going to be in trouble if I spend any more money.
For over 1,000 generations.
It is the Darksaber. Torontogosh.
It's a Kalikori.
A Sith wayfinder.
Dark science. Cloning. Secrets only the Sith knew.
The Den of Antiquities.
I haven't been in here in a while.
Yeah, it looks
nice.
It's nice. It's warm. It's nice. It's cozy.
It's got new lightsabers.
It does. When the Bad Batch characters were created for the Clone Wars, George, you guys know George, he mentioned that he actually envisioned them having their own series, like from the inception.
Crazy.
I don't know when the idea of them was conceived, but it seems like from what I've read and the way it's talked about, that it was long before season 7. Like, they had been talking about this potential thing for a while, right? Do you guys get that impression?
I forget what celebration it was, but they showed, like, the Bad Batch, like, animatics, like, as an episode at a celebration in, like, 2015 or something like that. So, before that...
Oh, that's right, because they were saved... In the same Lost episodes or Lost Missions thing, right? They were developed then, but they said, no, we're going to save this and do it right later, essentially is what it came down to. So years ago.
Well, the animated series at that point, too, was the leading force for Star Wars at the time, right?
Yeah.
Clone Wars was the only property that we had of live action something. And the process of that business of when Clone Wars started in, what was it,
2008.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, this was Lucas's vision to be like, I have to introduce as much into this time era and as much into these characters as we can. So that's not surprising to know that that was probably part of the plan all along. The Disney buyout obviously changed the trajectory of it. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all.
Did you guys know, maybe this is just me, the voice of one of the rebels with Saw, who kind of comes in and says, hey, this is about to happen, blah, blah, blah. He just kind of ends the conversation by chiming in. Did it sound like Jon Favreau to anybody else? Did you guys catch that?
I didn't notice that. No.
I didn't pick that up.
If anyone listening noticed that, hit us up. I mean, maybe we'll find out later, but it really sounded like him. It could have been one of those things where, like, he was just in the studio.
It was Dee Bradley Baker doing what he does.
Doing Favreau.
Right.
There's one thing we didn't mention. I really liked that scene. There was this one part where... Saw legitimately ends the conversation by like turning out like a giant light, like a lantern. And I was like, oh, that was pretty. And then like, I think on my second or third rewatch, I'm like, hey, it's Star Wars. That's probably symbolic. You know, like the light is now out and they literally Saw takes the rebels like away. You know, it's like the darkness has encompassed this whole group of people. So yeah, that scene was really, really pretty at first. And then I was like, oh, wait, there's probably symbolism there.
Yeah.
And I love where we're reestablishing Saw Gerrera as like he's gone even further into saying there will be no mercy. There will be no, they will not sympathize with us. They will not take us in to the Empire. We have been already marked as resistance, rebellion. And it's cool to see, you know, before we see him obviously in Rogue One, and we see him a little bit in Battlefront, we see him a little bit in Fallen Order, where, you know, you can see that Saw is clearly going off the deep end.
Jaded, disillusioned.
Right. Yeah. So that was really cool to see him reestablished as, his trajectory is exactly where you know it's going.
And it's so justified.
I mean, that's a solid 18 years later, you know, ish. That definitely brings up another thing that, you know, just popped into my head. In Solo, Enfys Nest kind of sounds like she's starting the rebellion, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but Saw...
There's patches, right? She kind of makes it seem like it's happening all over the place. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Enfys Nest.
This is a long amount of, like, a big chunk of time we have here to, like, really... I'm only saying that to keep everyone's like speculation at bay. It's like, don't speculate too close to A New Hope because we're 18 years away from that. So I think a lot of stuff has to happen.
Right.
Or at least has room to happen.
Right.
and all the different cells, all the different rebellion cells that we see, that idea addressed in Rebels.
Right.
The Bad Batch could be their own cell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's right. What this whole series could ultimately be about.
Right.
The opening Clone Wars Bulletin reenacts a few scenes from Revenge of the Sith, animated instead. Pretty sweet.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Reminder, Depo Balaba is on the council in The Phantom Menace. We see her in the council chamber there. Is it the same actor who played her on screen that voices her? Or?
Ooh, good question. I'm not sure.
Ooh, that's a deep cut.
Let's find out
I'm going to say 20 years. How long has it been?
22 years.
Yeah. I mean, hey, if they got Freddie Prinze to come back and voice a 12-year-old, they clearly don't care much about that.
Oh, dude, really quick, from a certain point of view, why is Kanan's voice so deep? I mean, what, or Caleb, why is his, I mean, he does a, hey, little guys, like kind of a teenager voice for a little bit, but then it's like, yo, my name's Caleb.
Right. He was, puberty is enhanced on the console, so they make sure that no one repeats Anakin's.
He went through puberty in that scene.
Right.
Yeah. That's it. He just hit puberty. That's the explanation. Let's find this out right now.
Yeah, Archie Punjabi voices Depa, but is Archie Punjabi in The Phantom Menace?
So where's the Bad Batch? Nope.
Okay.
Different actor. All right. Well, can't win them all. They can't all be Katie Sackhoff.
Good point.
Let's move on here. Tech, when referring to Echo, he says he's more machine now than man. Call back to Kenobi, of course, describing Vader.
Right.
Crosshair says good soldiers follow orders, like we talked about, which Tup says in season 6 of Clone Wars, early indicator that he had that inhibitor chip, somewhat functional. Omega is the last letter of the Greek alphabet, the end, essentially, right?
Which is interesting, though, because you did see clone babies, right? So it doesn't, I don't know that it necessarily means, like, a lot of people are like, she's the last clone. It's like, no, Tarkin was looking at clone babies, so they were still incubating.
This is speculation here, but what if that means, like, sort of the final prototype, the final public beta?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, this is the final version. This is the best version.
Yeah.
It's got to mean something.
With all of these mutations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For
you
sure.
You don't name her that for no reason.
For sure.
We'll see. Lamassu says, the skill level and efficiency of our clones is far superior to any recruited body, which is another nod to stormtroopers being useless ass bags who can't hit anything
yeah.
with a gun.
And ultimately, it just shows, like, you know, you cut costs over here, and look what happened to your empire, buddy.
Yep.
Slightly less effective.
Just ever so slightly unable to ever hit a target ever. AZ-3, the droid that helps Omega.
It's like a med droid.
The med droid, essentially, yeah. Is the same droid from the Clone Wars Season 6 with the arc about the inhibitor chips. That's dope. We didn't get the full name of the droid until this, right? Well, it's like 19 letters long or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And it drips through it hilariously, efficiently.
That wasn't in the Clone Wars? I feel like it was. I don't know.
I think it was just AZ or AZ-3. Yeah. Just kind of mentioned in passing. There's a great quote, which is actually one of the favorite quotes that we put in the poll. When Saw says, if we give up now, everything we've fought for, everyone we've lost will all have been for nothing. Pretty similar to 3PO's quote in The Rise of Skywalker, which is a great movie, by the way. Everyone who makes a meme that insults this movie that I read on Instagram. 3PO says, if this mission fails, it was all for nothing. All we've done all this time. It's good. It's good, people. You're going to appreciate this movie in 10 years. The Imperial checkpoints on Seleucami are really similar to the ones we see on Corellia in Solo. I got that vibe, too.
Yep.
Were we talking about this on the live stream a little bit?
Yeah.
Or maybe I was talking to somebody in the chat. Brad. I was talking to Brad. I mean, again, it's laying the groundwork for that whole thing, that show me your papers kind of Nazi vibe.
And I think is the logo that's on that tower, is that already, I'll have to go back and look, is that already Empire or is that still the Republic logo?
It has to have changed.
Yeah, it's probably Empire.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of cool that they had updated that.
And they're
that.
Similar, but not, you probably know, Mike, they're similar, but not the same, right?
Yeah, there's like six, I think it's six or five in the cog, and the Republic one has, you know, a lot more dashes on the inside. Yeah, yeah. So it's a little less complicated. Mm-hmm. But it is, yeah, the transition of seeing that is very cool.
The Empire's cutting costs. They got rid of some of the design.
They pulled the Pepsi cheaper. Move. They pulled the Pepsi move. Save money on ink. Yeah.
There we see the women's razor communicator, you know, Qui-Gon uses in The Phantom Menace. We see Hunter using that, and I noticed that right away.
So funny. It yeah. lives.
Straight from my mom's shower in the 90s.
I'm your Venus. I'm your communicator.
Mike, where in the costuming community, where do people have those? Do people make those?
Yeah,
do people have old ones that they use?
Oh, yeah. That those found parts, you find them, and I think they're spray-painted silver, and they have gold in there. But, yeah, that is a well-known part in the costume community because sometimes you find people that stumble upon stuff and you find them at garage sales for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Dude, how many people doing like an estate sale, you know, on the checkout when you bring up like on Sunday when everything's half price and you bring your little basket of crap, they go, I didn't expect anybody to buy this razor. This is weird, but yeah, 25 cents. And then meanwhile, the person's like, dude, you will not believe what I found at this garage sale.
Right. It's like, do you have any more of these?
Yeah. Well, we still occasionally see the people who buy the lot on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace that says old camera parts. And there's a freaking Graflex in there.
Yes.
You know, so that still does happen. And I get jealous every single time. But it's awesome seeing how this is such a detail show that it's like Easter egg after Easter egg. I think it's so great.
Anything else you guys want to move on?
Transport shuttles are the same as in Rebels. And that was modeled off of the Star Tours ship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So when you see them on, I think it's the second or third episode of Rebels when they get on and, you know, R2 and they're helping, they have to kind of sneak undercover to get the rifles that, and then you have, you know, a very similar DJ Rex from Ogus Cantina. That is the captain, the automated captain of the ship. So that was kind of cool. And then obviously the Scomp reference from Fallen Order, most popular. That's what Echo tells. They need to scomp in. So I thought that was a cool little reference there. But yeah, it's...
What does that mean for people who aren't familiar?
Scomp is essentially hacking or locking into when R2, you know, they don't say R2 hack the mainframe. You know, they say either plug in at the time, but scomping is the new term for basically overtake something electronic in Star Wars.
Scomping, slicing.
Yep. Right. Yep. Slicing, scomping. A Fallen Order reference, but all the way back to 1988, the RPG dice game from Star Wars. Deep cut.
I love you.
I know.
Favorite scenes, favorite quotes, favorite moments. What do you guys have? What's on your short list before we get into the ones that we polled, the patrons?
My favorite outfit is Wrecker's Coachella outfit. When he's wearing the poncho and the hat. That's my favorite outfit.
He's on mushrooms there, dude.
Yeah. He's like, Tame Impala's going on at 2 p.m. Well, no, actually, Tame Impala's going on at 2 a.m.
I thought the, in terms of what we saw, that opening scene of episode one, just kind of how they unconventionally just annihilated the battle droids. And, you know, and then they did the rock trick, right? Knock the big rock down that we saw referenced as Fennec also does this in Mandalorian, in the Boba episode. So I thought that was kind of a cool little Filoniism. But all in all, I mean, as someone who is a fairly recent fan of the Clone Wars, it's really cool to appreciate that they're diving. I think they're going to be connecting even further with the sequels. And I'm really excited for that because I think with more information and the fact that long form storytelling is such a Star Wars thing, and I feel like we've kind of been robbed of it, which is why this is such an amazing time to be a Star Wars fan. The fact that we're getting this era focusing on this small group of people in one of these cells, if you're right, Adam, it's awesome. So I loved that opening scene. I loved obviously the Kanan throwback. I love that his lightsaber was exactly the same. It was super fun. It set the tone and, is it Friday yet? Let's go.
Yeah, for real.
My favorite scene that we didn't list, I would say, honestly, pretty heavy scene with Tarkin and Lama Sue just talking about, yeah. you know, moving forward. I mean, it's really, really very sick to see Tarkin this early on in the Empire. And, you know, like we said, he's not Grand Moff yet, so he's probably going to do something either extraordinary or do a bunch of things really well to get himself a bit more power here. But that whole conversation was line in the sand yeah. for the Empire now.
Yeah.
I, of course, loved seeing Order 66 from another angle. Any of that stuff, I'm a sucker for any kind of like prequel or other angle of a scene that you already know, which is probably why I was like so obsessed with Pulp Fiction back in the day. Just the coolest concept to me to see, like, to just flip something and see a replay, or, you know, like a Groundhog Day kind of thing where you just keep seeing the same thing from different perspectives. I love that shit. So I love the opening, and then seeing Depa and Caleb was just about as awesome as Star Wars gets. But there were some character moments that really got me. And I mean, even as a non-parent, dude, the scene when Hunter tells Omega that she has to go with Cut and his family, and Omega's like, what did I do wrong?
Yeah.
That shit ripped my heart in half, dude.
Yep.
It was like, I almost just started bawling in that moment. And I can only imagine for somebody who actually has kids, who's had that kind of moment with their kid where you're looking out for them, but they're sad because they think that you're just furious with them, you know, like mm-hmm. they've completely fucked up, and then like the guilt hits. Oh, dude, that was gut-wrenching to me.
Yeah, for kids, you know, as a parent, you know, you want them to experience whatever joy or whatever they're doing until you have to kind of tell them, like, all right, we've got to tone it down. And they can't really understand why, if something was something so fun, like, what, we've been playing forever, like, why is this, like, why would we ever stop this, right? And you're like, well, we have to do other things today. But yeah, that was such a great moment for her to kind of almost be reminded that she was different.
Yeah. Right?
And where she's walking around this cloning facility, knowing that she's different, clearly not respected by the other clones. And to have that be like, well, I'm going on this adventure with these other clones that have kind of like accepted me, you know, and then to see they had that line in there is like, oh, am I back to square one?
Am I just a reject again? Yeah.
Right. Right.
Brutal. So I love that. And just to go back and add to the seeing things from another angle thing, the big gathering hall where they're watching the broadcast of Palpatine, where they actually play the clip from Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
The I have been disfigured, but, you know, that whole thing, loved that. And I love their kind of just their commentary where he says, I've been disfigured. And he's like, talk about it, you know, yeah. like, talk, you know, whatever. I love that kind of stuff because they, you're seeing the clones fully Order 66 activated, being as militant and robotic as they can be.
Yeah.
While these other clones are being even more individual and saying how they feel.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if it needs to be said or not, but like Order 66 is way more than just kill the Jedi. Like they're gone. Like mentally they're cheering for Palpatine at this point, you know, like
yeah.
Order 66 had a lot more to do than just killing Jedi. They're totally brainwashed at this point.
Yeah.
I thought there was that fun little detail where they're walking down and they're trying to figure out what the hell happened. And, you know, Tech goes, oh, hang on, let me try something. And he goes, excuse me, do you know? And they're like, you know, piss off.
Yeah.
And he's
yeah.
like, oh, seems pretty normal to me. So I thought that was yeah. pretty funny.
Yeah, there's a lot of good little comic relief kind of balancing out the what ultimately, if you think about it, like you're saying, Nick, they're completely brainwashed. Like all those clones, all that individuality, yet still a brotherhood is mm-hmm. just wiped out.
Yep.
All the stuff that we came to love about those clones, it's gone now. They're all dead, essentially, you know, and that's mm-hmm. brutal. So the little comic relief, it takes your mind off that terrible fact.
One more little detail, too, before I forget. If you notice, the Bad Batch are knocking out or hitting them. They're not shooting to kill.
Yeah.
So that's a cool little detail because I think
in episode 2 towards the end they did, but
I think Hunter might, like, when he realizes, like, they kind of, I think actually when they go to aim at Omega, I think it's where like Hunter's like, okay, I'm taking off the kid gloves. Let's go.
Was the stun though.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can see, and the bolts are still blue. That's important to notice too. They're still bluish white. But one cool little detail was that when Crosshair shot with his new gun, it was a red bolt.
Well done. It's interesting and exciting to think about the fact that most of what we saw in the trailer, aside from the shot of Rex, is from these first two episodes. Because I remember trying to pick which frames to put in the post. And there's the one, you know, where you see Hunter shooting one of the troopers, you know, you see that kind of exchange right there with the, you know, the storage containers, everything in the impound hold right there.
Yeah.
All that stuff in that trailer is from the first couple episodes. So we have a lot of exciting stuff to come.
We're going blind. I
mean, there's Fennec.
Besides Fennec.
Yeah. All right. Let's hand out some medals from our friends on Patreon. So we're back to polling the patrons. Now that we're covering stuff, we went with six nominees since we have two episodes here. So six nominees for favorite scenes, six nominees for favorite quotes. Favorite scenes we went with from episode one, first nominee, Order 66 and Caleb's escape. It's an extended couple scenes, but we kind of treated that all as one. Also from episode one, second nominee, the Bad Batch returning to Kamino, seeing that things have changed. The broadcast of Palpatine's speech on Kamino, another extended couple scenes that we kind of grouped into one. Episode one, Bad Batch meeting Saw Gerrera. Also from episode one, fourth nominee, the shootout with Evil Crosshair, the Bad Batch escaping with Omega. Fifth nominee from episode two, Hunter reprimanding Omega for going past the fence, Cut stepping in and speaking to her compassionately like a parent, like we talked about earlier, great scene. And the sixth and final nominee for favorite scenes, Hunter telling Omega she's not coming with them and Omega heartbroken. Out of those six, I know we discussed sort of our favorites, but you guys want to vote before we reveal the winners?
I'll go with Order 66. Can't lose with that.
Mike?
Is it lame to say the same? Because it's awesome.
No, I don't think it's lame. I think it's a great vote.
Then that is my vote.
Am I lame too? I kind of want to do that.
It's unanimous.
But I do love, I do love parts of the others a lot. But I mean, just nothing beats the impact of realizing, oh shit, Caleb's here. Oh wow, that's the voice. That's our boy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, seeing the lightsaber, seeing it all. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's going to be mine too. And it turns out the winner from the patrons with 53% of the vote is that Order 66 and Caleb's escape.
Well,
yeah, there it is. Second place with 27% of the vote from episode two, Hunter reprimanding Omega for going past the fence and Cut stepping in to speak to her like a papa. It was really good. That's some good cartoon stuff. No votes for the Bad Batch meeting Saw. Isn't that weird?
They're like, screw Saw.
Saw sucks, dude. And no votes for my my favorite heartbreaking moment either. So screw you guys. Thanks for nothing except
your patronage.
Monthly payment. Truly, thank you. But I guess we disagree on that scene. Doesn't matter, though. We all got our own opinions. Moving on to quotes. Six quotes from episode one. Crosshair says,
Republic, Empire... What's the difference?
Tech says,
the systematic termination of the Jedi is a big one for me.
That's great. I love that.
Solid. Nominee number two, also from episode one, Saw Gerrera. He really brought it. He had like a full monologue in this whole section. I actually had to cut one of his quotes out of here because it was just all him. He says,
if we give up now, everything we fought for, everyone we lost... will have been for nothing. I won't let that happen. The Clone War may have ended, but a civil war is about to begin.
Nominee number three, Saw Gerrera again. I love this one.
The old ways are done. You can either adapt and survive, or die with the past. the decision is yours.
The fourth nominee from episode one again, Wrecker. This one is great. They're in the mess hall, and Tech is kind of psychoanalyzing him and telling him that all their behaviors are programmed, and the way they are is because they were programmed that way. Sorry, you don't have free will, ultimately. And Wrecker says,
"Oh, well, I got a fact for you. I like to blow things up because I like to blow things up! Got it?"
Yeah. Fifth nominee from episode two, Sue, Cut's wife, says to Hunter,
"Children will always find ways of getting into trouble, Hunter. It's what they do. Protecting them is what we do."
The sixth and final nominee for favorite quote is Hunter speaking to Omega at the end, the very last lines of episode two.
"If this is where you want to be, then this is where you'll stay."
You guys have a favorite? You want to vote? Nikki?
I think mine definitely is Republic Empire, What's the Difference? The systematic termination of the Jedi is a big one for me, because I throw that null real-world generator, and I'm just like, when people are like, "Democrat, Republican, what's the difference?" I'm like, well,
there is actually a difference.
You know, there is.
Turns out there's a difference.
A little bit of difference.
I would say for me, the quote of the children getting into trouble is way fun, because my child does get into trouble. But more so, if you look at it in terms of that concept, Luke Skywalker was a child that, according to the Empire, got in trouble. And if you look at the process of all of the things that have disobeyed or disobedience in terms of droids not playing along, droids doing things they weren't programmed for, Sabine getting into trouble as, you know, a breaking off of her family heritage, I think that's a great quote, because you could tie so many things revolving to Star Wars with that. So I think that's my vote.
The old dad pick.
Yeah. Dadalorian.
Man, this is tough. The Republic Empire, What's the Difference one, I really love that. I'm leaning towards that. But I also love I like Saw's whole monologue. If we give up now, everything we fought for, and so on, ending with the Clone War may have ended, but the Civil War is about to begin. I remember writing that down right away.
Yeah, very, very cool.
And then the old ways are done. You can either adapt and survive or die with the past. That's reminiscent of Kylo's opposite take on it. Like,
totally.
You know, like, not just you might die with the past, but kill the past. You know what I mean? Those are both just killer for me. I'm going to go with number two. Saw, if we give up everything now, blah, 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 it will all have been for nothing. That's going to be my fave.
The show is unbelievably quotable. Let's just also say that, because I think now that the intention of this show has a very set beginning and end, that was the purpose of it. You know, I don't expect that we'll see another season of it. I think they're writing it very, it's strong. The writing is strong. The writing is precise. The writing is written almost to be dissected the way that we're doing it right now. So I think that's awesome.
All right. The winner, according to the patrons, with 30% of the vote, Crosshair, Republic Empire, What's the Difference? Tech, Systematic Termination of the Jedi is a big one for me.
Yeah.
That's so good. Should I have picked that one?
Too late.
God, I need to change my quotes.
I also love that they were in the hallway walking by all these troopers just saying that out loud. Yeah. Like, we don't give a shit.
This place sucks.
Yeah. These regs suck.
Yeah. The regs.
Regs. That's great. I love that. I love that that's a thing.
We don't usually work with regs. Second place with 23% of the vote, Sue speaking to Hunter. The dad quote, "Children will always find a way of getting into trouble. Hunter, protecting them is what we do." It's good. So in closing, hell of a show. I'm so pumped that we're getting like what feels like an old school full season of this. What do we got, 13 episodes?
I mean, I've heard 15, so we'll see.
Sick.
Cannot confirm, but why not? Let's do it.
Yeah, if it was just 8, I would be
Let the speculations begin.
And Mike, you're thinking this is one and done. That never occurred to me. I felt like it was just gonna go.
I think, if you look at it, it's like we could. I mean, of course, the storytelling. The longer you prolong what we're seeing, I mean, but eventually the timelines, in my opinion, unless you start right now we're getting all these crumbs thrown in, but it's mm-hmm. like until you get the donut, you might start to lose. It might not, you know, if you look at it, the business model of Star Wars right now, we're about to get the Book of Boba Fett. We're going to get Mando season 3. And then we have all these movies that we completely mm-hmm. forgot about are also coming out on the slate. And so I don't really get a sense that Disney is going to make the investment on more animated stuff to really hyper. This is a hyper-focused show in terms of the content of it, right? To explain where we were. We're basically just connecting two stories that your average fan could already know. But like I said, I'm very happy to be proven wrong.
Nick, any thoughts?
No, I'm pumped. I hope Mike's wrong and there's 10 seasons of it. I hope we see Kira and Han eventually, you know, like an Enfys Nest. That's what I want.
Yeah, give me an animated Enfys Nest.
Yeah, right.
Let's do it.
Wow. And then we could come over to the Discord and talk about all the potential. We've been trying to stitch those lines between the High Republic and mm-hmm. the look of the Nihil and emphasis design. Mm-hmm. Oh man, Star Wars is amazing. But yes, Nick, I hope I'm wrong too.
I mean, you know what is a huge factor if it does well or not? And I mean, in our Star Wars bubble, it seems like it's doing well already. So as long as people are streaming it, then I'm sure they'll figure it out.
We'll be there to watch and we'll be here to cover it. Let's close with a quote. I found a good one since William Ryan Key is still dead. I really segued the living shit out of this. This is great. The quote goes like this: Star Wars is not dead. It's going to get better and better. And that was said by none other than George Lucas. I don't know when or where he said that, but he was right.
Hell yeah.
Thanks, George. We like you.
It's about to be a whole lot of not dead. The slate coming up for Star Wars. This is the most amazing time to be a Star Wars fan. So it's most definitely not dead.
Hell of a time to be alive.
Oh, this is good.
All right, Mike, if the folks want to find you on social media, where can they find you?
That's a great question, Adam. Great to ask. You can find us, our new venture. Of course, you can find me at HondaSupply.com. On Instagram is where I'm most active. HondaSupply.com and HondaSupply on Instagram. But our new venture that we're very excited to be teaming up with Thank the Maker for is Armor Party, which is a show about the costumes of Star Wars and the costumers that really put them together. And the first show has been received very well. And we're getting a lot of great feedback from people who are sharing people that they'd love to hear more about their stories. And we've got the next two episodes going to be dropping. Well, the next episode is dropping next week. And I'm very excited. We'll give you a little teaser because we're talking with someone from who's a sewer. He runs a shop called the Dark Side Closet, and he specializes in sewing and doing these undersuits. And his story is really
a tailor,
yeah,
a seamster.
I referred to him as the Sith of the seams, he seemed to like that. So, yeah, it's been really fun having conversations with people, and it's great to be bringing more Star Wars content to the fandom. And I'm excited to be teaming up with Thank the Maker on that. So, of course, thank you for having me on today, and let's keep this going. This is amazing.
Hell yeah! At Armor Party Show on Instagram.
That's right.
And subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, Armor Party. Nick, how about you?
I'm at Nick Bayside on Twitter and Instagram. I went to Galaxy's Edge on May the 4th and then also on May the 6th. It was awesome. So you could see some pictures of that there. Definitely now that Galaxy's Edge is open, hopefully the Batu Crew Instagram also will start popping off a little bit more. And you can find both Batu Crew and Thank the Maker merch in the same store. Just go to thankthemakermerch.com and you could navigate your way around that site. Help support us. Mike's designed a couple of shirts for us. Adam's and Drew's designed a bunch of shirts. So help us make a little bit of money while we're being nerdy so we could be more nerdy.
Help us pay one bill. a month.
More money equals more nerdy.
The shirts are shipping. Yes. The shirts fit great. I'm loving my They Ate That Lady shirt for sure.
Yeah.
I'll wear that one at church. My stuff's all at Adam the Skull, but if you're looking for the podcast on social media, you can find us on Instagram at ThankTheMakerPod, on Twitter at ThankTheMaker. And if you want to support this podcast, get access to the Discord, vote on these polls, do AMA live streams and hangouts like we did on May the 4th, patreon.com/ThankTheMakerPod is where you can do that. We appreciate the hell out of it. It's just $3 to get access to the Discord. You could do a whole year.
All at once.
A mere $36. That gets you access. We hang out. We talk about stuff. But if you want to be a Jedi tier patron, $15 a month, that gets you access to the after show content like we're about to do with some more speculation that we don't put out here in these public episodes.
My crazy, crazy. Could I be clickbaity? My theory is so crazy. Oh my goodness.
Is it connected to the Willowverse?
It might be. I don't know. It's so crazy.
Sweet. All right. Everybody, thank you for listening. Patrons, thank you for being patrons. We'll catch you on the after show. And until next week with more Bad Batch, may the Force be with you.